You are listening to Wicked Psychotherapists, a podcast where two psychotherapists show you that taking care of and learning about mental health doesn't have to be wicked hard.
Hi, everyone. Today, we are coming up on spooky season, and we are discussing some fun stuff that we thought would be in the spirit of the fall season and, of course, Halloween. So we decided to talk about today's topic. So what are we going to talk about?
So as you know, we both love Halloween, and we decided to talk about The Nightmare Before Christmas. And we thought it would be a fun movie to explore some lighthearted discussion of the psychological elements within the movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's got a lot of stuff that we can dive into.
So let's get into it.
Okay. Well, before I do, I just wanted to put out there, and I think this is pretty obvious, and I'll state it. We're speaking from a hypothetical perspective. We're obviously not diagnosing characters that don't exist and are actually supposed to be dead and are actually just like kind of cartoonish characters. We're just trying to have some fun with this.
Okay.
The first point, we broke it down by looking at different themes, psychological themes, and talking about the character. The first thing that we decided to talk about was the feeling of emptiness, loneliness from Sally's point of view, the loneliness from Jack's point of view, the emptiness of wanting something different. And you had a really interesting perspective on that. Could you tell us a little bit about that with Jack?
Sure. Yes. We were talking earlier about how Jack, with Halloween just ended. He was having this big parade. It was all about him. Literally, people were lifting him on his shoulders. He's the greatest thing ever. As soon as it's over, he's, wait a minute. Who am I? What am I doing? What is my purpose? Having a big identity crisis, and he's having a midlife crisis as
well. And considering that he's having a, we're having a major case of the giggles today. We can't get over this.
Because it's really hard. And a straight face say that Jack is having a midlife crisis.
I just keep picturing him like he popped his head off.
Because if we are really thinking about Jack, he's dead. He's very dead. But in all of his death and all of his ruling and whatever he is questioning who he is. So that is one of the points we were thinking.
Yeah, for sure. It's like he kind of feels like he conquered being the Pumpkin King, right? He's reached the penultimate of his career or his identity, his being. And he's trying to kind of say, okay, you know, like I'm kind of bored with that because I know every year I'm the Pumpkin King. I'm the leader. I'm the best, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's like, what's the challenge here? Right. You know, which is a lot of people face that with identity crises or with saying like, hey, maybe I need to move on into a new phase in my life kind of thing.
Right.
He does this whole like song and dance. Right. And he's like, you know, I don't know. People don't understand. I have empty tears and, you know, all this other stuff. And the same side is for kind of different reasons. Sally is also facing her own feelings of finding her identity because she was created by Dr. Finkelstein. I think they maybe call him Dr. Fink, but the doctor. And he makes it very clear that he created her, that he's there for her, his creation. She's his creation. And it very much is, she gets very restless. She tries to escape. She even poisons him to escape because she really wants to go and find out who she is. Kind of say like, what is my identity according to me? Because I know how I am defined by the doctor. But what dynamics does that kind of remind you of? Like in terms of psychological sort of.
Sally definitely has low self-esteem, low self-worth. But as I watched it, it was hard to see that as much because, yes, she did have a lot of self-esteem issues. But I wonder if it's also because Dr. Fink or Finkelstein is very much like an abuser, very domineering to her.
I definitely see that dynamic. That's what it reminded me of, too. Like kind of a domestic violence situation, like you're nothing without me kind of thing. I also thought of a, you know, kind of maybe parent-child dynamic of like, I define you, don't go outside of these parameters. I stitched you, like literally stitched you together and made you, created you.
Right.
Yeah. And I hold these pieces, like when she kind of, you know, like runs away from him and he has her arm or whatever. And he's like, you need this kind of thing. Like I hold the key to your development. So there's a few, you know, a couple dynamics there that
I
could definitely.
I knew you would come back. You would need to come back.
I knew
you'd
come back. Yeah. Yeah. And this is kind of a dark take on it. That's the lens that we look at is very much the psychological perspective. So you might not see this movie in the same way. Just keep that in mind. Or maybe it's something that interests you and it's kind of analyzing some of these seemingly very fun movies and just kind of seeing some of these psychological components.
I did find something interesting, though, about Sally. Of all the people in Halloween Town that she chose as the person that she basically was saying was her closest friend and best person was somebody who was also struggling with his own issues of who am I, self-worth.
Yeah, interesting. I didn't even think of that. It was kind of like gravitating, like the kind of the blind leading the blind sort of thing, you know, like attracts like, you know, that sometimes we can see other things in other people that we may not be able to see in ourselves, but that we're feeling drawn to. So yeah, that's a really good point. And there's another point that I think you had pointed out, and I thought this is a good point. And I was sort of thinking this too, but when you said it, I just was like, yeah, that's it. Sally's a little bit of a stalker. He is not really certain the friendship she has in mind with him and is like wanting him to be like her partner. And she's watching him from the graveyard, singing and dancing about his loneliness.
Right.
That's just kind of like a nice little like, oh, I long for that, too. And he can kind of do that. But it could come off in psychological terms. It could come off as being a little stalkery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It could also be if she was raised in a family unit, if we call Dr. Finkelstein, whatever, I'm butchering his name, or parent or whatever it is, in that she never really had the ability to have relationships or foster friendships. She did not know what they looked like or how to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. Like she certainly didn't have a model for healthy relationships, but she definitely didn't have really much model for like that type of social connection with like a friend or a boyfriend, certainly not a healthy one. And so, yeah, maybe that was just how like, okay, I'm just going to watch this because this fascinates me, you know?
Right.
Maybe it's a little unfair of me to call her a stalker. Yeah, that's true.
I do see the stalker. I do see the stalkerness, whatever the term would be.
The stalker vibes.
Yes. I'd be nervous if she wanted to be my friend.
Even though she turns out to be actually a pretty good friend. Yeah, she
has, of most, I mean, we're not doing spoilers because it's 30 years old, but she does. She does seem like she has higher morals and ethics than most of the people in Halloween Town.
Which is pretty impressive considering her home life and everything. Yeah.
Poor Sally.
Yeah. Poor Sally. All stitched together with good intentions.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good perspective on that. I was thinking of another kind of theme moving on to like our next key point, which is like controlling behavior, which I know we talked about with Dr. Finkelstein and Sally, but there's also other elements in the movie too that we see in different relationships in terms of maybe some culty vibes kind of thing, some codependent relationship like dynamics going on.
So with Jack.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, with Jack, you know, he's kind of the influencer of this town. He's not the technical leader, right? That's the mayor, but he really kind of sets the emotional tone and vibe for the whole town. And it, like you pointed out, you said like that's kind of cultish, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he kind of really is very much like if he's kind of sad, they start to sing a song of something wrong with Jack, you know, like something's wrong, you know, like it's like everybody's like that's his, you know, that's their situation. And that's them, their problem.
It's very important for him to be the scariest and to be the most noticeable at the beginning of the there's a big parade all about him. And then he shows that's not enough. So now he has, oh, wait, I found this. Let's change Halloween Town because I saw something new. And now we're all going to do it, even if you don't really understand what I'm talking about. Because half of the characters had no idea, even after he's like, oh, no, it's this. It's these lights. It's Reese. It's presents. They still had no idea and they couldn't really grasp the concept. But he's like, we're doing it. This is my idea. You all want to follow my idea. Let's do it. And they're like, OK, well, Jack says it. So therefore, it must be great.
Yeah, it was very self-serving on his end. And they saw how excited he was and that like they kind of always took their cues from him. So it does have those cult vibes. It also has a very codependent relationship component because defining your identity, I also must see this as my identity, mirror image back and forth. Like I need to rely on you to define me kind of thing. That was kind of the vibe that I got from that because when they started singing the song of like something's wrong with Jack, I was like, damn, like their whole lives are uprooted because Jack has a changing emotion, you know, like that's pretty deep.
Or when the mayor, I thought it was interesting when the mayor's like looking for Jack, he's knocking on the door, getting upset, his face is happy, sad, happy, stressed out, happy, stressed out. Then he's so upset he falls down the stairs because Jack is gone. He's the mayor. And he even says to Jack at one point, I cannot make any decisions or I have no idea what to do. you need to lead me, in a sense. It's, yeah, he has this title, but it really doesn't mean anything without Jack.
Yeah, Jack sets the tone for what is right, what is wrong, how things are. And that's, I mean, definitely a cult leader, right? Or the sign of a, like, the town, the whole town is kind of codependent on Jack, right? And Jack is just off doing what he wants, you know? He's not really kind of, in that regard, he's not really depending on the town, but the town is very codependent of Jack. And I was wondering, with some of those themes, with codependency, cult vibes, do you ever experience, maybe not so much the cult type of stuff, I don't know, but with your own clients, do you ever experience kind of some of this language or kind of recognizing codependent patterns with some of your clients?
Yes, very much with codependency. You hear it with relationships, whether it's coupling or codependent. Maybe they have a codependent relationship with their parent or a friend or a boss. I see that a lot too, where it's very difficult relationship. But then once you start breaking it down, it's a very codependent relationship. And it does show up. It's interesting watching it in a cartoon or a show, a movie like this. But it might be easier to break it down if you compare it to The Nightmare Before Christmas. So you're like, oh, wait a minute. I've experienced that similar behavior, but with my mom or with my best friend or with my partner.
Yeah. That's a great point, that it can be with a lot of different relationships. It's not just like a romantic partner. Like, I mean, even here, we're talking about Jack with an entire town. And that's really good, you know, like to say, like, this could be a model of kind of recognition. I did want to actually just point out, I just realized some people may not know what codependency means. I know that it's kind of a term that gets thrown out there a lot, you know, but when it becomes dysfunctional because you're too enmeshed and reliant upon, you know, another person to define your feelings, who you are, your emotions, and people influence people. We're all social creatures. It's not to say that, like, oh, if somebody is my best friend, really likes this band, and then I listen to them and I really like them. We're codependent. That's not the same thing, right? You know, and also it's very simplistic example, but, you know, to say, like, if my friend, you know, hates this person, I have to, you know, absolutely go in and, you know, maybe hurt that person to show that I also feel that way as well. And to kind of prove that, you know, that might be kind of some toxicity built in there, enmeshment that kind of goes a little too far, right? You know?
And you forget what your interests are. It's not only just shared, oh, wait, but we share interests, but it's losing your own identity in order to share the interests of the person. For instance, Jack, all of a sudden, a whole Halloween town is celebrating Christmas because they are so enmeshed with him.
Yeah, he decided this is a great idea. And they're like, oh, okay. They immediately start to mobilize and say, well, let's start to make toys. And they make these creepy ass toys, you know, and they're like, okay, let's, you know, give a shrunken head and or like a, like, what was it, like a rat hat or something? Like a they were like, this is an old rat. It makes a perfect hat kind of thing.
Yeah. Duck fat looked like it kills someone.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's kind of, you know, a really important thing to recognize and to define is that there's a difference between we all influence each other in being people and being social creatures. It's in losing yourself and then becoming enmeshed and relying upon that with another person or group of people, you know, whatever that may be, which is kind of the way a cult can work. We could do a whole different thing on cults, but a whole different show on that.
Yeah. That's a really good way to define it, though, what you said with the explaining enmeshment and codependency like that.
You know, we see that a lot with clients, or I've actually had quite a few clients come in and say, I know I have an issue with this. How do I undo this? How do I work through this? And a lot of the work I've noticed, I don't know if this is the same for you, but what I've noticed is trying to define that person, what are their values? What isn't for them in their identity?
Yeah.
Because there maybe has never been that exploration, or maybe they got lost somewhere along the way.
And sometimes too, with relationships, when you have a partner, there is going to be some enmeshment and something that's going to look like we're partnering. And that can sometimes be confused as, oh, I'm so codependent with them. But you might not be, because a lot of times people are so quick to label everything, but not everything does need to have a label. Some things do need to be talked about a little bit more or explained a little bit differently too sometimes.
Yeah. And I think what it comes down to, is this healthy or not? Because you're right. It's like a marriage or a partnership. You know, the very fact is, you know, a lot of people are like, okay, in a marriage, technically, it's like two becoming one, right? Like, that's kind of the ideal. I'm not saying that's the way it is. And maybe that's how we view it anymore. And, you know, I feel like sometimes married couples, they'll dress alike and they start to look alike. It's because they're spending all this time together. And eventually, if you like live with someone or are with someone, you're going to start to become probably more similar, you know? And if that's something that works for your marriage, then that's okay. But if you're starting to say, oh, I really love, I don't know, I really love, you know,
parasailing
something. Parasailing, sure, yeah. I love parasailing, and your partner is anti-parasailing and is very much for no reason other than they just don't really like it, not because of like a danger component or anything like that. And you just find yourself maybe never really parasailing or never considering that, even though that's something that really, really, you know, lights up your soul and it's something that's really a part of you. But because your partner, you're afraid of how it'll, your partner will come back at you and say, oh, I told you I didn't want you to do this and I hate this and this and that. And, you know, kind of it becomes this kind of toxic dynamic of starting to define yourself by someone else's values completely. And you kind of feel like either you have to or that you should. That can be dangerous. There can be a lot of, I think, gray lines in there. It just, I think the key component is, does this come out to something that is, you know, healthy for you or, you know,
right,
something that is. And that may be hard to define, which is why you come to therapy, because you're trying to get another person's perspective. I know we kind of, we went over that one, actually. Let's go on to the next point. We saw a theme of, and this one's we have touched upon, is kind of, you know, narcissistic or self-serving behavior, which, of course, we can definitely see with Jack and probably Dr. Finkelstein, although we don't know his motives really as much.
No, it's weird with Dr. Finkelstein. Like, it's, you almost wonder if his whole, not that I'm saying it's okay or I'm giving a green light to him, but when,
that was why green lights kind of struck me as funny.
I don't think that I'm saying that, like, I need to approve or disapprove his behavior. Yeah, this cartoon. So yeah, but with Dr. Finkelstein, I started to understand why he made Sally when towards the end or the middle of the movie, when he started to create another creature and you see him putting part of his brain into this thing. And then at the end, it's his girlfriend or wife or whatever creepy thing it is. And he might have not wanted that with Sally. Maybe he was looking at Sally more of a child or other type of companion, but it was almost like he was very lonely and there wasn't anybody there, so he had to create someone to be there with him.
An interesting perspective, like he had to kind of create a family.
Yeah.
Like, and the, you know, and kind of to his, like, maybe he felt kind of outcasted. He, you know, was kind of this like eccentric, you know, doctor or scientist. And maybe he felt like, okay, I have to just create this.
He seemed like one of the only characters who wasn't stuck on a loop. Everyone else was so, all right, we have 364 days left till Halloween. We have this, where he's just in his own little world, in his laboratory, creating things, doing his own things, not obsessing about Halloween.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he was kind of left to just kind of do that. And he was like his own devices. He was kind of just left to that. And it seemed like he was kind of more focused on this creation of probably, like you said, like his family thing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he was kind of his own sphere and maybe it was out of loneliness. That's an interesting perspective. I like that. So maybe, and that kind of makes me think twice about about his character and in terms of how he behaved towards Sally, even like as maybe a possible like father figure.
Not a very nice father, but
like locking her up and being like, you know, but maybe he thought of that as safety, you know, like in terms of she's going to get in trouble.
Yeah. And maybe I was thinking of like, I don't want you hanging out with Jack. Jack is the scariest creature in all of Halloween Town. Why do you want him to be your boyfriend?
That's true. That's definitely a very valid perspective, I think, and a good point. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know we've been saying all along Jack's, you know, kind of narcissistic behavior and his self-serving behavior, how he just completely changes the theme of the town because he's bored. He needs a new challenge. Maybe it is an identity crisis, but he is affecting this entire town. Isn't really able to explain the spirit of Christmas. He kind of looks at it for more of like, he's looking at these books and it's like scientific method. He's like trying to explain it in terms of like, if I could just figure out the meaning, like the, he's thinking like the scientific logical meaning, but he doesn't really truly understand like the spirit of like, you know, he knows the words like joy and merriment, but like theirs is like, oh, like getting like, you know, a nice like dead animal and like as a gift kind of thing, you know, it's like in a very different vein. And then also the kidnapping of Sandy Claus, Santa Claus, and just thinking he could just take over his role because he just wanted to. It's very...
Yeah.
Very selfish. Very
and having no problem asking, what is it, lock, stock, and barrel to...
the henchman.
to gather him. And that way his hands are clean. He's not really having to worry about it. Just, you do this for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like you go do the dirty deeds and my hands are I'm hands off with it, but I'm the one that ordered basically. And the whole town listens to him. So of course they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, also the component of when he becomes in his, you know, own way by kidnapping or having Sandy Claus kidnapped and then goes out and serves in the role of Sandy Claus. He's got all these, you know, the sleigh is a coffin. You know, it's like completely the opposite of what you would think of for the spirit of Christmas, like skeleton reindeer, like a ghost Rudolph, you know, with the nose and everything. And he traumatizes the heck out of these kids, you know, like when one kid wakes up and then like sees him and his scary face, like he's a skeleton. And then all the presents he leaves for them, he's like scaring the crap out of them.
Hey, it's like, oh, they're going to love this. Trouble. Yeah, it's very.
It's very much like, this is my own. This is how I see it. So you're going to see it. It's kind of, you know, maybe narcissistic, maybe kind of trying to, you know, evoke some of that cultish behavior on in another realm, you know, out with the kids and Christmas and stuff like that. So there's definitely a lot of that. And it's so odd to me how the town just immediately adapts to Jack said he wants Christmas. And they're like, well, what the heck is Christmas? And he's like, oh, I got to explain it. Uh-huh. And then when he explains it, they just mobilize and they're like, this is okay, our line for making creepy gifts. This is what we're going to do, you know, to kind of the Dr. Finkelstein actually makes like the reindeer or whatever, the skeleton reindeer. And they just kind of, they go with it. They don't really question like, why is our entire being like who we are in Halloween, this Halloween town, everything is flipped, but we're not going to question.
You know? Yeah.
And that's so bizarre to me.
Yeah, no, no one. That's no one questions. The only person that really is questioning is Sally, and she's at first just worried that Jack is going to get hurt. That's her main thing because of her obsession.
Yes, I mean, I guess that depends on how you look at it. Yeah, yeah. And she says like, "Oh, I have this vision." She's kind of got a very intuitive sense. She's tied in with like, I have vision. I had a vision of like an explosion, which she turns out to be
true
right in that. And it's Sally, I think, who goes and is actually the hero of the story, the heroine, you know, like she tries to go and rescue Sandy Claus because she sees like, oh, this is wrong. This is going to put things all out of place. And I know Jack ultimately kind of sees that and goes down there, but it's Sally who puts her life on the line. Yeah. She's about to be put into the fire pit too with Sandy Claus.
It's interesting because they're in this little pit with Oogie Boogie, and Jack does ultimately last ditch effort save the day, like at the last 5 seconds. And you could tell he wants to take part of him. It's like he's ready to take the credit. Like, I did this. There's no more Oogie. But then Santa Claus is like, really?
You kind of calls him out.
Yeah. It's like you guys are all a bunch of psychopaths or whatever he says. And the only person with any decency or the only person that had any clue was Sally.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, kind of interesting because she's not a very visible character. And Jack is like the leader, like the, you know, the pumpkin king. And that's interesting that she ended up having the highest moral code in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. She does keep a low profile. She is kind of invisible compared to all of these very loud, obnoxious characters. It's almost like when you're in a family unit and you have the person that's always the quietest or the.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one, you know, it's. You know, sometimes you have to be, you know, within a family or a town or something, just the observer.
Yeah. To kind of point out the things that maybe are wrong or to kind of hold the moral values to a standard and to say, wait, you know, I can speak up at this and say, like, what's right? Because I'm holding that world in me. You know, I've been watching it and observing, taking that in. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, I know we could go on about all of these like offshoots of all these topics that maybe we will in the future. If you all are interested in us exploring any of these topics or maybe, you know, doing a deeper dive into something in particular or a different movie, let us know. This is fun. You know, we got to take a look at a spooky story and kind of, you know, put a little mental health psychology twist.
Yeah. Right?
Interesting to look at it from that point of view.
Yeah. And also, I think we got a lot of giggles and.
Yes, we definitely did. We record on Mondays and I don't know, maybe we're just not ready to start the week. But yeah, we certainly, I don't know if I'll make it to the final cut, but if so, Yeah, you'll see how hard it is for us to keep us.
I'll probably keep some of the giggles then. It's needed.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so, we hope you enjoyed this. And yeah, let us know what you think. If you have any suggestions for other movies or shows, topics in general for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We're at Wicked Psychotherapist. Subscribe and write us a review. And it really helps us a lot.
For sure. Yeah. And don't forget, stay wicked
and keep your mind well.